Radio.
What does it mean to be wise? A talk by Dr. Paul Morrissey at the Australian Catholic Youth Festival 2015, held at the Adelaide Convention Centre.
So my name's Paul Morrissey. I'm from Campion College, which is a liberal arts college, to put it in universal, a humanities college, Office of the Bachelor of Arts in the Liberal Arts in Sydney, in the west of Sydney. And it's a great joy to be with you today, and I'm going to give a little workshop, as you know, on wisdom. And some of you may have just rocked in here because the door was open and the time was there, and thought, oh, we've got to do something, so we'll come in here. And some of you might be really interested, but my hope is that at the end of this, each of you will think, gee, I need to be wise. It's important to be wise. Wisdom, or being wise, is probably not a term or a goal that many people talk about so much today. We often talk about wanting to be smart, or someone is smart, or they're really intelligent or cool or so on. But for a lot of young people, and at least this was the case for myself when I was a bit younger, I didn't really have much ambition to be wise. But now, having understood what wisdom is, in fact, that's a goal of my life. I'm certainly not there yet, but it is a goal of my life. So that's the aim of this workshop, is to open up this area of wisdom. Now, it's quite a large group, so it's not so easy to be interactive. We're meant to be a little bit interactive because it's a workshop. So from time to time, I'll stop and pause, and if someone's got a question or they don't quite follow or whatever, please just raise your hand. But it is quite a large group, so it's not going to be that easy. Okay. So what I want to do is firstly look at the difference between being wise and being smart, or the difference between wisdom and simple intelligence. So people, I think you probably understand the idea of intelligence or being smart. And that means you know something accurate about something. You know something about something. You have a certain intelligence or a degree of knowledge about a particular thing. Now, each of you, I'm sure here, are incredibly smart about at least one thing. Now, it may be that you're incredibly smart about a certain television program, and you know every single character that's ever been on this particular television program. You know their background story, you know the actors, you know the writers, the creators. You know everything about it. You're incredibly smart about that particular program. Or, okay, at least this is from my experience of being young, I knew everything that could be known, probably not everything that could be known, almost everything that could be known about Australian football. Because I loved Australian football, and I loved knowing about all the players, and I used to love just looking up the percentages of the teams, and you know, their points for, points against, and so on. Just a lot of information that I knew, I was really smart about. But if you know a lot about TV, football, or whatever it is, you might know a lot about trains, a lot about Lego, a lot about dolls, a lot about lots of different things. Doesn't mean you're wise. It doesn't mean you're wise. So that's what I want to point out first, that wisdom is not just simply about intelligence. Wisdom is more about an art of thinking. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the art of thinking. When you think of the word art, what do you think of? What do you think of in terms of art?
Creative.
Something that's creative. So we often think of the creative arts, drawing and so on. was thinking, we don't often associate that with art, being creative or learning tools of the trade to be a good artisan. But thinking requires tools. Thinking requires a certain creativity. Thinking requires that we have certain dispositions enabled to grow, in using our mind to grow in wisdom. So I just want to list a few of these. This is not an exhaustive list, but things that are crucial to be a wise thinker. So the first one I want to mention is the importance of silence. The importance of silence. It's very difficult today to find times of silence or reflection. And I think you know that better than myself. But when you're alone, you know, whether you're catching a train, in your car, or wherever you are, I think today most of us have the temptation of pulling out a phone or doing something. Because we can't stand silence. We can't stand being alone with our own thoughts. But to be a good thinker, to be a wise thinker, we need to embrace silence. It's really important. Another word for silence in a religious sense is contemplation. To be still. To take time to be, just to be. If we don't manage to find that time, we may be really smart, we may be really intelligent about lots of things, but it'll be hard to grow in wisdom. Because to think deeply about things, we need time, we need silence. We can't be distracted all the time. And that's just not about wisdom, that's about being a human. So silence is really important. In terms of the art of thinking, silence is crucial. Connected to silence is the importance of leisure. Usually we associate leisure with having a bit of fun. And that's true. But leisure in the philosophical sense, or the deeper sense of that word, is finding time away from the day-to-day distractions. This doesn't necessarily mean silence, but it means enjoying being alive. So for some people that means going for a bushwalk or reading a book that you enjoy just because you enjoy it. Or listening to a piece of music because it helps you understand things. Notice that this isn't just about distraction. It's about going a bit deeper. That's what the real sense of leisure is. And if we don't have that time of leisure, if those things that help us go a bit deeper, but also help us be refreshed, then it's hard to be a wise thinker. Because it's those things, those leisurable things, that give us a depth as a human person. You may have heard that there's seven deadly sins. And I don't want to get distracted by talking about the seven deadly sins, but one of them is sloth. Does anyone know what sloth is? The deadly sin of sloth.
Being lazy.
And that's mostly true. It does mean to be lazy, but as a sin, as a spiritual sin, sloth means to be lazy in terms of the good things associated with God, spiritual goods. It's being lazy connected to the spiritual goods. And sloth also means, or one of the symptoms of sloth, is to be distracted, to be too busy. So it's not just That we may think someone is, they're not lazy, they are on the go the whole time. In fact, they could be very slow because they can't stand sitting still, thinking about the goodness of God. So they're just constantly distracted. And today, it's so easy to be constantly distracted. So I remember reading one philosopher saying that today is the most slothful of all ages, even though it's the most busy. Because people are so disruptive. And we can't stand being alone and being quiet. So leisure and silence are crucial sort of foundations for thinking, or the art of thinking.
Some other quick points about the art of thinking. To be a good thinker, we need to have a sense of value of that which has gone before us.
There's an expression that I really like, that when we go about the task of thinking, we need to stand on the shoulders of giants, those who've gone before and have thought the best about the things that are most important to think about. Those thinkers that have really tried to delve into the depths of the meaning of the human person. Those thinkers who've tried to delve into the depths of the mystery of God. And so on and so forth. It's important that we don't just start thinking about something, that we take into account those that have gone before. And that's really crucial in the art of thinking. Another important aspect in the art of thinking is charity. Charity, not in the sense of you've got to give money to the poor sense of charity, but charity in the sense of its deeper meaning, love. To be a good thinker, you need to be a good lover. In the sense of not just loving ideas, but loving people. Because there's a danger when someone is a good thinker. One of the greatest traps of the good thinker, of the great philosopher, is that they don't actually love people. And they're not going to be very wise. They may be very smart, but they're not going to be wise if they don't love the other. So to be a good, wise thinker, got to be able to love the other. Not just in the sense of an abstract, I love humanity, but to love the person next to you. Love the people in your family. Love the students you teach. Love the teacher who teaches you in a deeper way. So charity is crucial in the art of thinking. It's also important to have a healthy suspicion. And healthy is a key word here, I think, because often today we can be quite cynical. Of course he'd say that. A lot of you are probably thinking that now. Of course he'd say that, wouldn't he? That's his job. He has to say that. That's what this festival's for. We naturally have this sort of cynical side, particularly in Australia. But a healthy suspicion doesn't just trust anything that you receive, particularly, say, in the media or in the culture. It's to have a healthy suspicion in the face of the incredible amount of information we get. I'm sure your teachers, those of you in school, always say, don't trust the internet. Anything. They could, anyone could post on the internet. And it's true, isn't it? But it's the same with everything. Just because a book is published doesn't mean there's truth in it. It may be, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's true. I read it in a book. Must be true. Well, maybe. Maybe not. So it's good to have a healthy suspicion. Not a cynicism, not a default suspicion, but a healthy suspicion in the face of information and what people say. And finally, there's more here, but I mean, interest of time, we have to keep going. And I think the most important thing to be a good thinker is humility, the virtue of humility. Humility comes from a word that means the earth. So it means to be, or to have a sense of yourself that is not low, as in low self-esteem, but a sense of perspective about who you are in the greater scheme of things. Isn't it so tempting, and this is really what original sin is. Original sin is to think that I am the centre of the universe. The universe is so small because I am the universe. Everything revolves around me. That's really what the original sin of pride is. Humility is to say, in fact, no, the universe, the cosmos, God, others, you know, compared to that, compared to the whole history of creation, past, present, future, I'm pretty small. Why is that important in the art of thinking? One, it helps us not to take ourselves too seriously. It also helps us respect that which has gone before. And it also helps us to know that we can't know everything. Which is really important. So humility. So there are just a few points I would say about the art of thinking. There's more we could talk about, but there's some crucial things, I think, if one wants to be wise.
All right, now we need to actually get into, well, what is wisdom?
So wisdom, in the philosophical sense of this word, wisdom is a virtue. Has anyone heard the word virtue before? There's a few people. That's good. A few more, yeah. That's good. Okay. Often we talk, I think most of you would have heard of values. Hands up if you've heard of values. That's another V word. Slightly connected to virtue, but not quite the same. So what is a virtue? A virtue is an ability. Virtue is an ability that each of us has by virtue, or because we are humans. Each of us are made with the innate ability to do certain things well. To do certain things in a way that makes us human beings. And Aristotle, the great pre-Christian philosopher, Aristotle, the pre-Christian philosopher, identified four, what he called cardinal virtues, four of these innate abilities that humans have by virtue of the fact they are human, that when we cultivate them, we actually realize who we are as human beings. And wisdom is one of these abilities. Wisdom is one of these abilities we have as humans. Now, the thing with virtues, though, although each of us has them because we are human, they're not automatic. They're abilities that need to be developed. So we need to learn them, and they need to be cultivated and built upon in order for them to be realized. And so Aristotle identified four. And they encompass lots of other things as well. But four sort of general hinge or cardinal virtues: wisdom, justice, temperance or self-control, and courage or strength. Four virtues that help humans to be human. So I'm going to come back to wisdom because that's the focus for this. Just a quick, brief word on those other virtues. Justice, that is the ability to give what is owing or due to the other. To give what is owed. So justice demands that I owe a certain amount to God, for example. Not owing as in money, but owing in terms of my life. I owe God thanksgiving, praise, allegiance. I owe my wife quite a deal. In a sense, my life. That's a spouse. That's a lot. That's why marriage is such a big issue of justice. Because I owe my wife so much. I owe my children a great deal. My children owe a great deal to me as their father. I owe a great deal to my job. Notice how we owe a lot to a lot of people, don't we? Each one of us. Justice is the virtue of being able to give what is owing to the other. That's what being human is, in a fulfilled way. Being able to give what is owing to the other. So justice, temperance or self-control is basically that human ability we have, to control those things or those aspects of ourselves that we share with the animals, namely our desire to eat and drink and to procreate. So in relation to food, drink and sex. If we didn't have that ability of self-control, we would just be instinctual like the animals. So we share these aspects with the animals, because we are rational animals, we are animals as well. But temperance makes us human. Self-control makes us human. Really important virtue. Without this virtue, we are likely to be in jail. Unless we're really good at not having any self-control. And the fourth virtue is courage, or fortitude, or strength. And this is a moral virtue. This isn't the, bungee jumping virtue of just leaping off cliffs and so on. It's not the virtue to say, I don't fear flying. No, it's not that courage so much. It's this moral courage. When it's really difficult to give what is owing to someone else, justice, courage helps us. When it's really difficult not to eat more than I should or to have sex when I shouldn't, then fortitude, courage helps us. It's that moral courage. Or, and this is really a very difficult thing for us humans, at every stage of life, often we say, oh, teenager, it's so hard with peer group pressure. Peer group pressure just goes on and on. It's with life. It's very difficult sometimes when one's peers say something and you know it's wrong. Courage says, I'll stand up for what's right. So those are the four virtues: wisdom, justice, temperance, and fortitude. So back to wisdom. So wisdom is a virtue. We have to learn. Yes, we're born with it in a sense because we're human, but it doesn't just happen like that. Doesn't happen. I'm turned 18 now, I'm wise. If you turn 18 and you haven't learned any wisdom, you're not going to get a struggle. Now, most of you are here at this festival, in this room. Most of you are pretty wise, I think. You've learned quite a bit in terms of wisdom. It's a lifelong journey, though, learning wisdom. But where do we learn it from? Where do we learn to be wise? Does anyone have any ideas? Where do we learn to be wise?
By making mistakes.
Excellent. We learn from ourselves when we make mistakes. Wisdom, knowing what is good, knowing what is not so good, we learn that by experience. Experience is a key aspect of growing in all the virtues, really, but in wisdom particularly. We must learn from our experience. If you don't learn from your mistake, what happens? You repeat it. You repeat the mistake. Some people never learn, do they? Mostly ourselves. Certainly in some areas, we always repeat the same mistakes. Someone else had an idea about where we learn wisdom?
Common sense.
Common sense. Where do we get common sense from? Sometimes common sense isn't all that common, is it? But common sense is true. Common sense is a received wisdom. It's a received wisdom. Sort of the, in a way, the wisdom of the ages, the wisdom of a culture. And that's really important to learn. Good.
Logic,
can you
explain that a bit? By reasoning or rationalising something, you know, using reasoning
to deduction something like that. Good. Yeah, so this is probably as you get a little bit older, so when you're really young, you learn from experience, you learn the received wisdom, but as your mind becomes more developed, you can reason things out. You can say, okay, if I do this, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. If I do this, this will happen, this will happen. I might do this, because this seems the best way to do it. Correct. Another really interesting, in the interest of time, we need to keep moving, but certainly those who teach us. And think of the people who've taught you what you know in terms of the moral life, the good life. Think of those people, your mother, perhaps, your father, your grandparents, a teacher. They've taught you that this is a good thing to do, or this is a valuable thing. I should pursue this. They're teachers of wisdom. But it's a development. We learn, and we go on, and we learn from our mistakes, we make mistakes, and we go on. The important thing is we learn, and then virtue, and this is a word that's often associated with a virtue, becomes a habit. If you think of a habit, people here got a bad habit? Most people have got a bad habit of something. I won't mention, you don't have to share what bad habits are. But hopefully you've got lots of good habits. And good habits are a way, not a perfect way, but are a way to think about virtues. They become who we are. So a wise person doesn't just become unwise. They've learned, they're habitually wise. They think rightly about things because they've learnt it. It becomes part of who they are. And that's what a virtue is. The virtuous person can't help but be virtuous, because it's who they are. They've learned it. It's become part of their soul. Virtuous. If I was doing a longer course on this, we'd need to talk about what we call the theological virtues, which are those virtues that God gives directly, faith, hope and love, which are obviously really crucial too. But because we're focusing here on wisdom, we're just focusing on these, we call them more philosophical, more human virtues. Now, just a quick word on virtue and the moral life, and wisdom and the moral life. So if, for example, sometimes when I talk about virtues and wisdom, some people get a bit disheartened, usually when I talk about temperance sometimes. Some people think, oh, I've got no self-control. And they think, oh, how am I going to do that? Because the older we get, the harder it is to learn a virtue. You may have heard it said that the older you are, the harder it is to change. And that's a basic fact of life. Why? Because we've either learned virtues or we've learned vices. And a vice is a bad habit. A virtue is a good habit. How hard is it to change a habit? It's extremely hard to change a habit. And the older you are, and I know this as I've got older, I find it really hard to change some aspects of my character. You know, every year I say, I'm going to get fit. I'm definitely going to get fit. I'm going to start running. I run 2 or 3 times in the morning. I get up with my son and run. And after 3 times, oh, I just can't do it anymore. And I go back. And next year I do exactly the same. Because it hasn't become part of who I am. Now that doesn't mean I'm sinning or whatever, but it's part of that. It's part of it. So also with these things that we strive for. So wisdom, maybe we haven't learned very well what's right from wrong. And we're lost. We turn 80 and we're lost. The culture says one thing, okay, I'll do it. Someone else says, I'll do it. No, this wisdom is not there. So you should never lose hope, because as Christians, we believe God can infuse these virtues as well. And we also know that wisdom is a gift of the Holy Spirit. I'm not going to talk about that because that's a topic. But we should pray for the virtues. Pray to be wise. We need prayer. Just to give you a quick example of this, I think it's the best example I know about virtues. It's not to do with wisdom per se, but it's associated. Some of you may have heard of Matthew Talbot, who was a great Irishman, and he's cause for to be made a saint has commenced. He was an alcoholic by the age of 13. He was one of many children, a dozen children, and he was an alcoholic because his dad was a publican, so he just would go around and drink the leftovers from left on tables, scull the rest of the beers, and he just got addicted to alcohol. To the point where he just had absolutely no self-control with alcohol. That's what an alcoholic had, no self-control. There's no temperance. They have no self-control. So, he had a big conversion when, I think he was about 18, but I don't know the exact date. But he was sort of later teens, he had a big conversion, and he decided to commit his life to Christ. And from that moment, he never had another drink. But he never had the natural virtue of temperance. The natural temperance sees a drink, maybe enjoys a drink, and then will say, that's enough. You can enjoy the drink because they have temperance. He saw the drink and he just, it was such a struggle. Such a struggle. God gave him the temperance needed so he wouldn't fall back into it. It's the same with the other virtues. We can pray for them where we're not. And each of us, with wisdom, in sort of knowing what's right from wrong, we always need help. We always need help. We never fully arrive there. Wisdom is also, just one last word about wisdom as a virtue. Wisdom is the virtue, or seen as the queen of all the human virtues, the most important in terms of the moral life. I think it was Aristotle who had this expression that wisdom is the charioteer of the virtues, the one who's at the front, the chariot behind the moral life. Why is that? Because wisdom is knowledge of what is good and what is not so good. What is good and what is evil. And the wise person is not just knowledgeable in the sense of I know all the moral rules and I know all the do's and don'ts about the moral life. That's not the wise person. It's a step to wisdom, but it's not. The wise person is the one that can choose well when there are two good things. Because most of the moral life, most of our moral decisions are choosing between two good things or two indifferent things. So, for example, those of you at school, finishing up school, are thinking, well, what should I do? Should I do this Well, should I do that? Now, providing one isn't, you know, drug dealing, the other, you know, extorting money and working for the mafia, then they're going to be pretty good choices, education, or, you know, going to do some marketing, so on. They're good choices. So the wise person can think well about those things, make good choices. Because there's always good choices before us. But some of those choices, if we take them, won't be very wise. You know, give an example, say, for my own state of life. You know, I'm married with some younger children. And say I went to a talk, maybe tomorrow, on why it's important to be a missionary in Africa. And I hear the talk, I think, shit, I've got to go and do that. That sounds fantastic. So I get back to Sydney and I tell my wife, look love, I heard this talk and, you know, I'm called to Africa. And I'm off next week. I'm going to give my life to the poor. Now that in itself is a fantastic call, isn't it? It's not a very wise one. So that's the wise person, that's an extreme example, obviously. But a wise person can choose well when there's two competing goods, two things that are good. And for a young person, that's really important to know. It's important to choose as well. Particularly young guys. Young guys, we are, when I was, pretty hopeless when it came to actually making decisions, making choices. So don't be afraid to make choices. You do learn from our mistakes. All right, last section. Has anyone got any questions about that?
Or comments?
All right, so the last part, probably the most important thing. Wisdom and happiness. Who here wants to be happy? Well, most of you, that's good. Who wants to be sad? Oh, no one. That's good too. All right, happiness. Wisdom and happiness. What does it mean to be happy? Now, I think there was a song, wasn't there? Last year? Or? Happy. It was a nice song, a nice happy song. Made everyone feel happy, at least for a moment. We are created to be happy. Even those people who enjoy being sad are happy about being sad. When I was in about year 10, so this was a while ago, but there was a bit of a trend at that period to sort of be miserable, sort of a trendy miserableness. And people would wear dark clothes, and you know, it wasn't very trendy to smile. But people were really happy in this sort of trend. They felt, this is, you know, I feel a sense of fulfillment in following this trend. Now, Aristotle said that every single choice we make is to be happy. So even the person who's doing something terribly wrong, and we can see that it's terribly wrong, why are they doing it? Because they think they'll be happy. Every moral choice we make is because we think we'll be happy. So think about the choices that you make every day. Make them deep down because you think that choice will make you happy. Another word that's probably a little more accurate in terms of what we're talking about, happiness is in its roots, is fulfillment. To be fulfilled as a human. To be fulfilled. To realize who you are, who you're called to be. That is the deepest sense of. Now, when I talk about happiness, I like to give a quick couple of examples to say why it seems that we're actually created for happiness. When I was a bit younger and I was doing, after school, I did a Bachelor of Arts, and it took me a long, long time to do this Bachelor of Arts. And about halfway through this Bachelor of Arts, I decided to go overseas. And so I worked for 6 months to have 6 months in Europe just to travel. No work, just travel. And so for about a year, I was just building up to what I thought, I'm just going to be so happy. Imagine that 6 months of just seeing all these places, all these things that I've wanted to do. I don't have to do anything. 6 months. So I worked and worked and worked to build up to this. Now, those of you who've travelled, even to travel here, you know that travel doesn't bring a lot of just that sort of day-to-day happiness. Most of the time, that 6 months, I was miserable. You get on the plane, it was Air Lanka, I think it was, the airline. It was the cheapest possible flight I could find. And I remember getting on the flight and thinking, my goodness, I hope this takes off. And you know, those sort of one-day flights, 24 hours, and you're sort of like this, 24 hours. It's just terrible. And I remember thinking, why am I doing this? And it's true that the travel was a fulfilling experience in Spain, but there wasn't a lot of happiness in a superficial sense. Another example, we're always building up, we always project that we'll be happy sometime. Another example that I like to give is marriage. So when you meet, you know, the one you love and you decide to get married. I remember thinking, you know, so we had about a year and a half of engagement. We're going to be so happy. What a perfect life. We're going to be so happy. About 2 days into the honeymoon, big fight. Both of us were pretty miserable. Didn't last long, I thought. I was building up. Another example, this is for Robin up in front here. Teaching. I remember thinking, I'll be a teacher. And I will be the best teacher. I'm going to be so good. And the students will love me. They will love me. And I'm going to be so happy teaching. And some of you are probably thinking, you know, when I have the perfect job, I'm going to be so happy. Every day is going to be perfect. I'm going to have just the right amount of money. The perfect spouse. Perfect children. All these things we project to the future. Then I'll be happy. And it's true, there's fulfillment in all that. And there's deep fulfillment and a happiness there. But it's always fleeting. The point I'm making is that we are created for a deep, deep happiness. And we realize this just by being human. But that doesn't end. That is not fleeting. That goes on and on and on and on and on. Never, ever ends. And that's what the good life is. That's what wisdom pursues. To be good for all eternity with the one who is goodness himself, all perfection, God. And that's what true happiness is. We're striving for it. I'm striving to be the teacher. I'm striving to have a good marriage. I'm striving to have, you know, perfect children. I'm striving for the perfect holiday. I'm striving for the greatest experience of Catholic Youth Festival. I'm striving for this happiness. And that's important to strive. But the wise person knows that ultimate happiness resides in God. And that's where our choices need to point towards. To that ultimate happiness. I want to leave it there, but I was hoping to open up to any questions or comments that people may have had. One at the back.
I just want to ask about the word discernment with regards to wisdom.
So discernment is probably back to that art of thinking.
Yep.
So a discerning person doesn't just act on a whim, but will, you know, discern, as in the sense of think deeply about what it is they're considering doing or not doing. So discernment is that, I guess, pause before one acts, if we're talking about the moral life, there's a bigger question of discernment when one calls, talks about choice of life, as in a vocation, or big discernments. But those little discernments are also important, that we make every day when we make choices. Wisdom, though, is as a virtue, is helps us to be human. If we had to discern every choice we made, it wouldn't do anything. So wisdom is that, if you like, moral reflex to choose the good in lots of little things through our day. And often they're things that are already presented to us. So when we go to work, we know what it means to fulfill our role at work. We don't have to discern, you know, what we're meant to be doing in any respect. So it's, so wisdom, a discerning person is a wise person. But if we overly discern, we may end up actually not being very wise.
I was going to say, the reason I brought up, Solomon in his dream asks for discernment. He doesn't ask for wisdom. And then he proves his wisdom through being a lateral thinker with a riddle around a baby.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What's the higher order priority? Discerning? Or?
I think a discerning person is... Yeah, I guess with anything to do with the virtue of wisdom... is to avoid the extremes. So a wise person avoids extremes. And again, with discernment, obviously we have to discern big decisions and think carefully about them. But mostly the moral life or our daily life involves decisions that are reflexive of the wise person. Yeah. That's a really good question. In fact, I probably should have... So the question was, you know, we strive for true happiness, but we'll never actually attain it until eternity. Is that what's the point you're making? So that's a very good point. No, we do have moments of true happiness, but I guess the point is that they are fleeting. So, you know, just to go back to my own examples, obviously, travelling, I had some incredible moments, deep moments that I would never have treasured. And I was deeply filled, deeply happy. So I reached that moment. I reached that state of happiness, but it's fleeting in this. So the point I suppose I'm making is that we're striving to that where it's not fleeting. It's actually an argument for the existence of God. It's called the psychological argument. That we are created, we have a desire for happiness. And we should, desires are made to be fulfilled. We don't just desire happiness, but now it's like another example is going back to my love of football. So I married for the Sydney Swans, and they won the premiership in 2005. I was so happy, man! This is fantastic. I've reached sporting nirvana. The next year came around, first round, we lost. Devastation. So it was fleeting. Same with, you know, everything in our life is fleeting. But those deep moments of happiness is fleeting. We are striving for something great. Yep.
For people out there who don't believe in God or believe in religion, is it then possible for them to achieve deep happiness?
Yeah, in a sense of fulfillment. So I guess if you're talking about eternal happiness, that's a different... It's not a different question, but it's a different... But in terms of we're talking about salvation and in terms of someone who doesn't believe in God, obviously they can have deep fulfillment and happiness by virtue of their humanity. Any other comments, questions? You're probably all a bit hungry, tired, people are yawning. The wise thing to do would be... But I'm going to take it. Sorry. Yep. Yeah, contentment is similar, but contentment can also be related to simplicity, to have a simple life. I'm content with my life. There's a certain happiness in that. So certainly avoid, I may have given the sense here, I've just got to keep striving to be happy. That's just what we naturally do, even if we just want to be content with what we have, because we know that's where happiness is. Okay. Okay, well, thanks for your patience.
That was Dr. Paul Morrissey with What Does It Mean to Be Wise? This talk is from the Australian Catholic Youth Festival 2015 and was recorded as a collaboration between XT3 and Cradio. And for more from the Australian Catholic Youth Festival, and for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.